boots crushing fallen masonry. Emerging out the other side, he saw the high walls around the spaceport. Turrets let off ripples of fire, punctuated by tracers as they pushed back against any Cassatt fighter that got too close. He slid under a highway overpass and ran beneath it toward the target buildings, three tall residential structures along a highway. Nicodemus's location pinged on his HUD just ahead of Roland.
"The governor's got a little more than half the population to safety," Nicodemus said. "They can't risk another big hauler so long as this walker's out here."
"Getting off this rock is one thing," Roland said. "How'll you get back to Navarre? Smashing the crucible is pretty standard practice for any planetary assault. Could be days before it self-repairs."
"How about you worry about the walker and let the squids worry about the wormholes?" Morrigan asked.
Light flared over the overpass like a lightning strike. Roland caught a glimpse of the Cassatt walker between buildings and heard the rumble of a collapsing structure in the distance.
"You two, up Tower A," Nicodemus said. "I'll go B. I'll signal the other lances once we're in place."
The stomp of the walker's advance echoed around them as Roland ran through a chain-link fence and a playground. Toys and small carts littered the area, testament to a sudden evacuation and parents leaving with upset children. Looking at a doll and stuffed bear left in a puddle, he hoped whoever left them behind was already safely away in orbit.
"Grip the outer frame!"
Morrigan sent Roland a blueprint overlay for the building.
"Got it!"
Roland jumped up, punched into the building's facade, and found the metal skeleton. He braced his feet against the wall and began climbing, punching through the concrete and lifting himself higher. Morrigan laughed, a sound that froze Roland in his tracks.
"What was that?"
He looked where she was climbing a dozen yards away.
"Just remembered an old TV show my grandfather used to watch. It was ridiculous," she said. "Get moving. If the walker gets past us, we'll be silhouetted against the skyline so well, we'll deserve to get shot."
"Right."
Roland tested a foot against a windowsill and broke a segment of the wall away. It tumbled down and shattered against the parking lot. The walker stopped. Through the glass on the other side of the building, Roland saw the walker's helm turn toward them. Roland pressed himself against the metal bar just beneath the concrete outer wall. Rays of light shot through the cracked glass windows, and the walker began moving again.
"I would slap the back of your head for getting that thing's attention," Morrigan said, resuming her climb. "But the frame must have masked us, and now it won't suspect an attack from here. Quick thinking."
"I'm making this up as I go along,"
Roland said, pulling himself over the edge of the roof and lying face down next to Morrigan. Both had their palms pressed against the roof as the snap of heavy Gauss weapons echoed in the distance.
"Get ready,"
Nicodemus called out from the top of the next building over. Like a sudden dawn, light grew from the walker's crystal cannons.
"What about the missiles?" Roland asked.
The walker's cannons fired, sending off a wave of heat that sent steam and smoke roiling off the roof. Nicodemus's building rocked from side to side, then collapsed in on itself with a cloud of pulverized concrete dust. Roland watched in horror as it fell, floor by floor.
"Nicodemus!"
Morrigan lifted her head up. Cassatt missiles shot up and roared directly overhead.
"Now! Now's our chance!"
Roland popped up and sprinted toward the edge. Morrigan followed a step behind. He leapt off the roof and fell through the smoke of a passing missile. The walker's head and shoulders were a few stories below. Roland wished he'd kept his jetpack as he hurtled toward the walker, knowing that just a little push would send him to a decent landing. Instead, his heels clipped the edge of the walker's shields and pitched him forward. He belly-flopped against the walker's hull and started sliding down. He slammed a hand against the blue surface, but the metal didn't yield to his armor's strength. Roland slid toward the edge faster and faster. He flailed against the hull. Then two fingers gripped an open missile port that whirred as it brought up a new munition and launched it with a rocket flare. Ignoring the damage as the heat threatened to fuse his knuckles solid, Roland swung a foot up and hooked it onto the port's edge and hauled himself up. He grabbed the edge with his other hand as another missile launched, scorching his armor and sending static through his HUD. Part of him felt embarrassed taking this abuse, but it was better than falling.
"Roland, take my hand!"
Morrigan reached down from the shoulder and pulled Roland up. Roland steadied himself as the walker began moving. He looked back at Nicodemus's wrecked building, then to Morrigan.
"Now what?"
he asked.
"We're not here for the view,"
Morrigan said, going to the walker's head. The glass panes of its face were turned toward the spaceport. She punched the back of its head, leaving a divot in the blue metal. She struck again and again, wailing on it like it was a punching bag. The walker stopped, and the head spun around. An Ixio sat in the cockpit, mouth agape as Morrigan hammered a fist against the glass.
"Roland, the emitter!" she shouted.
Roland pulled his Mauser off his back and went prone on the walker's shoulder. He looked over the edge and saw nothing but the torso's smooth surface.
"I can't see it!"
he shouted. Across the highway, Gauss fire opened up, peppering the walker's shields. Motes of energy flowed off the hull, and Roland spied a focal point. He fired his Mauser and blew off a fragment the size of a car hood. The walker swung around, turning its back to the direction of Gauss fire.
"Get the other emitter!"
Morrigan kept one hand gripped against the glass edge of the cockpit while she pounded the other against a crack in the glass. The Ixio inside shouted and waved its spindly arms about.
"They have to shoot!"
Missile fire from the opposite shoulder cut him off. He spun around and crawled toward the other side, nearly slipping off as the walker lumbered forward. A line of light formed a square between him and Morrigan on the hull. A hatch popped up and an Ixio stood there, holding a rifle that pulsed with blue light. The alien hefted the weapon out of the hatch and aimed it at Morrigan. Roland slapped a hand around the Ixio's skinny neck and flung it away from the walker. It struck the inner shield wall and vanished in a snap of electricity. Roland jammed a foot against the hatch before it could close and stood over the opening. A pair of Ixio looked up at him from a compartment inside the walker. Roland loaded a round into the Mauser and calmly pointed it into the opening.
"Soft hearts," Roland said,
firing the high-powered shell into the walker, which tore through the deck plating. The explosion sent a gout of flame through the hatch, and cracks and smoke broke along the upper side of the walker's shell, like a creature within was trying to break out.
"Do you think that took out the emitter?"
Morrigan asked.
"I'll just keep shooting it until..."
Three rail cannon shells tore across the city and struck the walker dead center, the impact and lines of ignited air preceding the booms by several seconds. The hypervelocity shells punched clear through the walker and ripped it into the tower behind it. The walker tipped back and broke in half. Roland and Morrigan went into freefall, their arc taking them toward the blasted-out tower. Roland snapped his anchor spike from his heel and struggled to keep his head and shoulders high as he fell. He slammed one hand home against a metal spur and stabbed his anchor into the concrete. He slid down the side of the building, ripping loose masonry as he went. Turning around, he reached for Morrigan, whose fall was a few feet short of ever reaching the wall. Roland snatched her by the forearm, and she swung like a pendulum into the building. Roland felt the wall quiver as he fought to hold the weight of two suits of armor. The walker collapsed against the base of the building, fire spreading through the broken hull, the weapon crystals shattering into small hills of glass.
"Roland, you got me?"
Morrigan asked.
"Nope."
The wall broke free, and they fell 100 feet to a slope of debris. Roland landed hard, the impact sending static across his HUD and straining his hip and knee actuators. He skidded down the slope, knocking loose an avalanche of concrete fragments and dust. Morrigan beat him down, making her descent look like child's play as Roland stumbled into the street beside her.
"Well," he said, "that could have..."
Morrigan grabbed him by the shoulder and pulled him forward just before a multi-ton section of the fallen facade rumbled through where he'd been standing. Roland tapped the side of his helm.
"I think my audio receptors were damaged," he said. "You think?"
Morrigan looked to the second building where Nicodemus had been.
"I've got his emergency beacon. Come on!"
Roland followed her into the wreckage, a tangled mass of metal beams and the remnants of the lives the colonists had inside. Morrigan began tearing through a pile of beams mixed with the couches and beds of a family apartment. Roland pushed aside an elevator, his servos squealing with effort.
"Nico!"
she shouted through her speakers.
"You're not dying like this! You hear me? This isn't how she said you'd go!"
Roland tore open a metal casing for the elevator shaft.
"There's a void in here," he said. "This where his beacon is?"
"No,"
Morrigan said, shaking her helm.
"Back there."
She pointed to a field of rubble.
"No, it's bumping around in the mess."
She turned around.
I can't leave him, but there are so many civilians left.
"The saint never wept for him," Roland said. "That's what you meant a second ago, right? She never wept, so he's not gonna die in his armor."
Morrigan touched the Templar cross on her armor.
Then have faith, Morrigan. If he's...
A fist punched through the rubble next to a metal beam. Roland lifted it aside and found Nicodemus's dust-covered armor. His helm was cracked, a deep dent in the forehead.
Nico, are you okay?
Morrigan helped him to his feet.
Of course I am. Why wouldn't I be?
Nicodemus's helm twisted to one side and snapped against the servos. He slapped the palm of one hand against his helm and it popped back into place. The lance commander looked over the remains of the walker.
Good. You two did good,
Nicodemus said as he pulled his feet out of the rubble.
Was that a compliment?
Roland asked.
How much of that building fell on you?
Nicodemus gave Roland a short punch to the shoulder.
The last transport is almost ready,
Nicodemus said as a light on the side of his quantum communicator pulsed on and off.
Full evacuation coming. Not enough birds to get the crunchies out. Kasat are pushing on the spaceport. They need us.
Nicodemus made for the highway leading to the walled spaceport, dust sloughing off him with each footfall.
Beanhead,
the lance commander said.
You're doing better than I thought you would. Morrigan?
He's iron, she said.
Sorry, what?
Roland asked.
We'll fight beside you any day, Roland.
Nicodemus beat a fist against his chest. Roland slowed down as something stirred in his heart, a feeling he hadn't felt in a long time. Pride. Gideon's rail cannon snapped with electricity, the forward tips glowing red-hot from the shot. The Kasat walker lay broken against a building, fires fluttering around it. Ignar brought his rail vanes up and slid them down his back where they locked into their housing. His anchor came loose from the road, taking a chunk of asphalt with it, so he stomped his heel down and knocked it clear.
You think the Ibarra armor survived?
He asked.
It doesn't matter to me,
Gideon said as he unlimbered from his firing position and pulled his anchor from the ground.
Their tactics were unorthodox,
Shareel said.
One of them stopped their fall against the building and caught the other. Do you think they planned their escape that way? Too many things could have gone wrong. The angle of the walker's fall, if it exploded instead of...
If it's stupid, but it works, it isn't stupid,
Ignar said.
That thing was about to fire on the spaceport, and they opened a chink in the armor for us.
Gideon looked down the highway and saw a lance of Ibarra armor running toward the spaceport.
That you, Nicodemus?
Gideon wondered.
Are you even here?
Sir,
Shareel said, pointing down the highway opposite the direction the Ibarra armor were going. A red-armored Ulan raised a spear over his head, traced a circle in the air with a tip, then pointed to the east.
Regroup,
Gideon growled.
More Kasat to deal with before the traitors.
Chapter 29. Leto clutched the side of his holotank as his ship lurched from another hit. Lights flickered and a damage report flashed on a panel.
Exo, get fighters to the Normandy,
Leto said, reaching into the tank, but the icons sputtered each time he tried to touch them.
She's venting Atmo, and that means deep structure damage.
All squadrons are engaged, Paxton said. Every fighter we have is in a dogfight. We've got nothing to send. Admiral, the Kasat are hailing us.
The communications lieutenant waved at the command deck. Leto looked at the timer. Still 6 minutes left. He patched Makarov and Erickson into the hail. Makarov came up instantly. Erickson's visor was cracked, a patched job of tape over the left side of her helmet. Tiny spurts of air leaked out through her seals.
Erickson, you're venting,
Leto said. She put a hand to her helmet, then exhaled long and hard, fogging the inside of her faceplate. Leto froze as she ripped her helmet off with a puff of air as she exposed herself to the raw vacuum of a ship under combat conditions. She slapped on an emergency helm and fastened the seals around her jaw and the back of her head.
That's better, she said. Valdar used to make us do that drill every day.
Leto opened the channel to the Kasat. A tusked sonheel in red and gold armor filled the holotank.
Humans?
It rumbled.
I know one. Leto.
Primus Gorthig,
Leto said.
I remember you and your ship blowing up over Oricon.
Death is little more than a setback for the Kashat,
Gorthig said. Leto couldn't help but glance at Makarov.
You fought well, but you are outgunned and outmaneuvered. Surrender now, and I will not kill you in the void. Your crews, born of abomination, will labor under our command until their final day. Your trueborn will meet a different, greater fate.
Die free or live as slaves. You don't know humans very well, do you? Leto asked.
This battle is over. The Kashat are victorious. Surrender now or there will be no mercy.
Gorthig said.
You're right, Makarov said. This battle is over. I won it 9 minutes ago.
Doppler hit,
Paxton shouted. In the holotank, macro cannon rounds appeared, all vectored toward the Kashat ships battling the Terran fleets. Erickson waved goodbye to Gorthig. The bedrock of any system's defenses, macro cannons were massive cannons that could propel multi-ton shells to several percentages of the speed of light and lay fire to most any spot in the solar system, and a few more besides if using planets to slingshot ammunition. With any such system, time was a key factor. As fast as the shells were, they took time to reach their target, time in which the target could change course. And even the slightest variance in a munition's ballistic calculations could cause a miss by thousands of miles. To bring the Kashat fleet into a designated kill box, then flood that kill box with simultaneous strikes from the system's macro cannons was a tall order. But baiting Gorthig with a poor maneuver by the Terran fleet had brought the aliens to the right place at the right time for the defenders. Macro cannon shells whipped past the Terran fleet and tore through three Kashat cruisers before pulverizing Gorthig's battleship. The ship exploded into an expanding fireball that winked out in seconds, leaving a cloud of tiny fragments behind. More shells smashed into the Kashat, turning their armada into a sky full of fireballs and shattered hull plating.
Some Claw ships survived, Paxton said. We'll pick them off before they can regroup.
The remaining ships near the moon are moving into low orbit, Makarov said. Smart. I can't risk a macro hit on the moon. It could knock enough of the surface away to threaten the planet. But then again...
Are all your systems this well defended, Admiral Makarov? Leto asked.
Attack another and you'll find out, she said.
What do we do about the surviving Kashat ships? Erickson asked.
We attack before they can damage the crucible any further,
Leto said. He reached into the holotank and selected the least damaged ships in the two fleets.
I told you I'd get you to it.
Where?
Makarov looked to one side, then back to Leto in narrower gaze.
Contacts,
Paxton said, flinging the crucible moon into the middle of the holotank. Blue icons of friendly ships appeared over the horizon. Leto froze his channel with Makarov.
Admiral Leto.
A Terran admiral with 5 stars on his collar appeared.
High command decided to send in the fleet reserve through an offset jump when you didn't check in. Good thing we brought pioneers to repair the crucible.
Fleet Admiral Hastings.
Leto swallowed hard.
The situation...
looks to be well in hand,
Hastings said.
I see the Ibaris stole the one-time gates from us too. Your artillery ships have the range. Take it out before they can escape.
Admiral, after the Kashat arrived, we agreed to terms with the Ibaras.
And the Kashat are dealt with. I've more than enough ships to make quick work of what they've got left. We sent you here to do a job, Leto. Is there a problem?
Leto thought hard, searching for some way to de-escalate the situation.
The Ibaras still have their macro cannons, sir.
Yes, we know where they all are now. Far out system. Shouldn't be too hard to mitigate the risk. How long until you have a firing solution?
Hastings' tone hinted that he was quickly running out of patience.
Stand by.
Leto put the channel on hold. He looked up at Paxton and locked eyes with her.
I'll go speak with the gunnery.
She winked.
Should be a while until we can fire, what with all the jamming or something.
Leto looked at Erickson's holo.
My system's going on the fritz, she said. I have to shut it down. Send text if there's anything pressing.
She shut down her perfectly fine connection. Leto touched Makarov's portrait and the young woman came up.
Makarov, How long until you can jump out? Leto asked.
Just like that, she asked. You gain the upper hand, and our deal is gone? I should have known you.
Not my decision. We all work for someone, and Fleet Admiral Hastings sees things differently than I do. I'm trying to help you, but I need to know how long until you can jump.
15 minutes, she said.
Best I can give you is 10.
Leto clenched his jaw as anger flashed across her face.
10 minutes of bad computation data. Hastings isn't an idiot. If I try to stall longer than that, he'll relieve me of command and send orders direct to the artillery ships, and you won't have 3 minutes before you're trapped here with him. Now get everyone out that you can.
And what of those I leave behind? She asked.
Prisoners of war, treated as best as I can manage.
She bit down on a knuckle, then pointed at Leto.
You. I can forgive for this. But now, I will never trust you or any other Terran again. In the harm that comes to my people, I will revisit on you tenfold. You understand me?
Get out of here, Makarov.
Leto gave her a quick salute.
Don't take this personally, but I hope we never see each other again, because it won't be as friends.
Best not, for your sake.
She cut the channel.
Gunnery,
Leto called across the bridge.
Time on that firing solution?
Chapter 30 The rotary gun on Roland's shoulder ripped through an open-topped rocket transport, and sparks flew as the bullets punched through the thin metal and out the other side, slaughtering the aliens within. The weapon snapped toward another transport where Rocka leaped over the sides and kept spinning.
Out of rotary ammo,
Roland said and ran to the transport, jamming his hands beneath the tracks and flipping it over. Rocka went flying through the air and the transport burst through the wall of an administrative building. An alien shot Roland in the back of the helm, the hit cracking an antennae array and scrambling Roland's HUD. He twisted around, grabbed the Rocka by the leg and used it as a club to crush two other Rocka while a third tried to run. Roland hurled the mangled mess of his club and splattered the two against a wall.
Duck!
Nicodemus shouted over his speakers. Roland fell to one knee just as a Cassatt tank tumbled through the air right where his head and shoulders had been. The tank hit the remains of a hasty barricade put up by the Ibaran defenders and flattened to Sonheel. Looking back at the source of the flying tank, he saw Nicodemus and Morrigan finishing off the last of the Rocka. Beyond the barricade was the spaceport, separated from the city by a chasm. 3 causeways crossed over the expanse that stretched from a few dozen yards in width toward the far edge of the spaceport to almost a quarter mile wide at the causeway nearest to Roland. Rocka and Sonheel advanced down the causeway toward a fighting position manned by legionnaires. Remnants of Cassatt tanks and their dead littered the battlefield. This wasn't their first push on the spaceport, but it would be their last if they broke through the final line of defenses.
They're attacking, Roland said. How do you wanna?
A spike hit the ground near Roland's leg and bounced off his shin. Sonheel, in the bottom floor of a nearby building, stabbed their rifles through windows and fired on the black-clad armor. Roland swung to the side and drew his Mauser as a spike ricocheted off his breastplate, leaving a long gash. Firing his heavy cannon, he blew out a support beam, and the building collapsed, pancaking several floors onto the Sonheel attackers.
Damn it!
Morrigan said as she pulled a spike out of her left knee servo. Nicodemus tugged a spike out of his shield and tossed it aside.
They must really want us alive, Morrigan said. Stupid decision if they think we'll ever—
Watch out!
Roland yelled as he caught a flash from the upper floors of the building behind her. He reloaded a shell as the report of Sonheel rifles broke through the air. Nicodemus lunged toward Morrigan, his shield stretching over her. A spike struck it dead center. The next shot chipped off the edge and pierced Morrigan's back, her armor locked up, then pitched forward like a toppled statue. Roland fired into the building, blowing out windows and disintegrating entire floors. He put 2 more rounds into the enemy position before he looked to Morrigan. Amniosis fluid leaked out of the tear in her armor. Nicodemus had one hand at the base of her helm's neck servos.
Morrigan?
Roland asked.
She's alive, Nicodemus said. Hurt, but alive. Get to the bridge. The last transport isn't away yet.
He pulled Morrigan's sword hilt off her leg and tossed it to Roland. He caught it and held his arm steady.
She needs
Who are you here for?
Nicodemus roared.
For her, or for your oath as a Templar?
For the innocent,
Roland said, looking back at the spaceport where the Cassad advance had broken through the first line of defenses around the chasm.
For us all.
Save them.
Nicodemus pointed toward the bridge, and Roland saw three Cassad spikes embedded in Nicodemus's arm, hip, and lower back. Roland brought Morrigan's hilt up to his helm in salute, then ran toward the battle, transforming his legs into treads and accelerating forward. At least a dozen Sanheel were charging down the causeway, their shields flaring as the fighting position fired on them. Where the causeway met the road stretching along the outer edge of the chasm was a burnt-out Cassad tank. Roland drove toward the tank and slapped a new round into his Mauser. Raka huddled next to the tank, looking up just in time to see Roland as he drove right over them and used the tank as a ramp. Roland let his momentum carry his treads over his head as he sailed through the air. He fired his Mauser on a Sanheel at the back of the pack and hit it where its upper body met the hindquarters. Roland slapped in another round, transformed his treads back into legs, and got off another shot that punched a Sanheel into the chasm. Then he swung himself upright and landed in the middle of the officer pack. Roland bashed the barrel of his Mauser into the face of an alien and dropped the weapon. He grabbed his sword hilt off his thigh and hit his forearm against the same Sanheel's neck while he hooked the bottom of his sword behind its head. Roland pulled the alien off balance and used it as a shield between him and another alien as it lunged at him with a crackling bayonet at the end of its rifle. The alien ran his companion through. Roland jabbed the edge of his blade at the alien that looked horrified at what it had just done to a friend and cut a deep gash through its throat. A blow to his back knocked Roland forward. He rolled over the bayoneted alien, slapped a hand against a Sanheel fumbling with its rifle, and shoved forward, sending it through the railings on the side of the causeway and plummeting to its death. Drawing Morrigan's sword, he lunged to one side as a Sanheel reared up to strike him with its front hooves. Roland stabbed it in the belly and twisted the blade, then cut across and disemboweled his attacker. He then brought both swords over his head and launched a twin slash down on his next target. The Sanheel tried to block with its rifle, but the blades broke through and hacked into its shoulders. Roland ignored its screams, put a boot to its chest, and kicked it free. The remaining Sanheel formed a circle around Roland, their rifles held high and bayonets pointed at him.
You want them, you alien filth? You have to go through me. You understand?
Roland yelled. A Sanheel lunged at him. Roland parried the strike and sent a riposte up the barrel, severing the attacker's hands at the wrists. Then he ducked and made a blind swipe with his other blade through the air, connecting with a stab from behind and breaking the muzzle. A bayonet rammed into his left arm, just above the elbow. Sympathetic pain arced through Roland's body. The Sanheel wrenched the bayonet from side to side, its mouth open and bellowing. Roland jerked away, but the enemy's blade was wedged tight. A Sanheel ran at Roland from the other side, rifle braced against its side. Roland reversed the grip on his other sword and swung the flat of his blade into the rifle, deflecting it to one side and into his already stricken arm. The impact ripped Roland's left arm off. His HUD pulsed with damage reports, and he felt his connection to his armor lessen as the suit tried to prevent his nervous system from overloading and sending him over the red line. Roland kicked the charging Sanheel into the other one, and they mashed against the railings, the metal creaking and bending as their combined bulk proved too much for the rails. They broke through and tipped over the side. One managed to grab the edge of the road, its hand holding on for a second, then it slipped away. Roland raised his good arm over his head, the blade angled down toward the three remaining Sanheel.
You go through me, Roland said. I will carry your shell back to the Savior.
The Sanheel in the middle said, and aimed its rifle at Roland. Gauss shot snapped from the fighting position, igniting the Sanheel's shields. It whirled back toward the source of the attack and fired its rifle, blowing away a corner of the barricade. One alien swung its rifle toward the fighting position, the other aimed at Roland. Roland bent his arm and threw his sword. It hit with a thump and buried in the alien's chest. Roland picked up the other sword from his severed arm and charged. The blade cleaved a Sanheel's head, and he left the weapon there and tackled the last one, landing on top of the alien and punching it in the face, cracking the orbit around one eye.
Through me!
Roland brought his fist up again and struck with all the force his armor could muster. The blow split the Sanheel's skull and cracked the road beneath as the sound of distant Gauss fire and fighter engines drifted over the causeway. Roland stood up,
and shuffled toward the sword buried in his enemy's head, pressing what remained of his other arm against his side. He ripped the sword free and looked down the causeway where alien dead littered the road. A team of legionnaires peeked over the fighting position. Roland motioned toward the spaceport.
"Get out of here," he said.
"It's too late for that, sir,"
a legionnaire said. The causeway rumbled and a transport lifted over the walls, angling up and roaring toward the sky. Gray eagles and black shrikes formed an escort as the transport made its escape.
"You could have made it,"
Roland said. The legionnaire shook her head.
"If they got through you, they'd have to get through us."
The air rumbled and a mule in Ibarra colors flew overhead. The rear ramp was down and a crewman waved to Roland from the cargo bay. Roland scanned through his comms frequencies, but his damaged antennae found nothing. One of the legionnaires had a hand to the side of her helmet.
"Tell them there are two armor soldiers just to the south of here," Roland said. "Both damaged and in need of extraction. Nicodemus and Morgan."
The legionnaire did a double take, then nodded. The mule banked away.
"Pilot's got eyes on them," the legionnaire said. "Said he can take two suits, not three."
"Get them out of here. We'll hold here for pickup."
Roland looked down at his wrecked arm. "You got a name?"
"Loyola, sir."
"What?" She cocked her head to one side.
"Roger."
She took her helmet off and red hair spilled down one side of her face. Setting the helmet down on the top of the barricade, the open end angled toward Roland, she touched the control screen on her forearm.
"Roland!"
Nicodemus's voice came from the helmet's internal speakers.
"Yes, sir. Transport's away. Morgan?"
"We're loaded."
The mule rose up from where Roland had left them behind, and it roared on the same path the last transport took, afterburners glaring in the sky.
"Admiral Makarov's ordered a full and immediate retreat. Ours is the last mule off Balmaceda."
Loyola tightened the grip on her rifle.
"You had a deal with Lady Ibarra," Nicodemus said. "Now she's honoring her end. I'm transmitting our Kasat data to your armor, and you can go home."
Roland looked up at the mule as the afterburners cut out and it vanished into the sky. A data line on his HUD flashed as a small file transferred over.
"Was that the plan all along?" Roland asked. "Leave me behind once this was done?"
"Lady Ibarra told me to give you the choice to stay with us or go back. The war made the choice for you. I am Alec Nicodemus, Ferum Corde."
"I am Sinead Morgan."
Her words were tinged with static as the distance between them grew.
"Ferum Corde."
"Take our names with you, Roland,"
Nicodemus said.
"Right well, Templar."
The speakers cut off. Looking to the sky, Roland asked himself if he would have returned to the Ibarras if he had the chance. After several long seconds, he still didn't have an answer.
"What was that about, sir?"
Loyola asked.
"I don't know,"
Roland said.
"Contact!"
One of the legionnaires pointed down the bridge, where armor advanced down the causeway. Red Ulans followed the white-clad Templars of Colonel Martel's lance.
"Sir, what do we do?"
Loyola asked. Roland looked down at Morrigan's sword in his hand. He flipped a switch on the hilt and locked it against his leg.
"It's over," Roland said.
Reaching up to his rotary cannon, he unlocked it from the mount, tossed it aside, then discarded his Gauss cannons with a flick of his arm. The Terran armor stopped a few dozen yards away, but Martel and Tongea continued forward. The colonel looked Roland over, studying the damage to his suit.
"Governor Thrace has ordered all Ibarra forces to lay down their arms," Martel said,
"and surrender."
"I'll have your name."
"I am Armor."
Martel stepped back and looked at Tongea. If Martel didn't recognize his voice, Tongea certainly would. Roland dipped his head in shame and slouched down to one knee, studying his black armor and the alien blood staining it.
"What have I done?"
Roland asked.
"What have I done? Why are you here?"
Tongea asked.
"Because I am Armor."
Roland looked up.
"Because I could not let others go to war while I chose to stay behind."
"Then you are our brother," Martel said.
"Stand. The righteous will never be shaken, and they will be known with honor."
Roland got to his feet.
Will everyone see it that way, sir? Roland asked.
No.
Martell placed a hand on Roland's shoulder.
But who we are will never change.
Chapter 31 Roland examined the manacles around his wrists and the chain connecting them to a hook embedded in a metal table.
Let's go over what you thought you saw in that church,
Commander Kutcher said as he leaned back in his seat opposite Roland.
You encountered some sort of genetic variant of Asaniel.
They were Toth, Roland sighed. How many times do I have to tell you what they were?
And how many times do I have to ask you if you're a xenobiologist?
Kutcher slapped the palm to the table.
You were trained in the Armor Corps, not as a Pathfinder. Just because you might have come across what could be another part of the Kasat doesn't mean what you saw were Toth.
I told you where the bodies are,
Roland said.
Go to that church and find them. Have an actual xeno-specialist get an answer that you'll accept.
I told you what they were, what they said to us. They didn't move like Sanheel, weren't armed like Sanheel, and they didn't fight like Sanheel. Why? Because they weren't Sanheel. They were Toth. How convenient that church was destroyed in the fighting, and your armor only had the last few minutes of video logs before Colonel Martell found you.
Kutcher crossed his arms over his chest.
Convenient, no?
It was a battlefield, not a parade ground. Things tend to get damaged, Roland said.
Hardly. Forensics says the data was erased through a non-local command. Your Ibarra friends didn't want us to see what's behind their curtains, he said.
Nicodemus must have sent the command when he transferred the Kasat data. You have looked that over, haven't you?
Roland raised an eyebrow.
What I'm more interested in is what you told the Ibarras.
Kutcher shifted in his seat.
All they wanted from me was what I knew about the Ixio. Ibarra made the connection to the Toth from that. Killing their warriors on Balmaseda turned theory into known fact. And since you haven't answered whether you've seen the data they gave me, and since you're not that interested in anything I learned from them about the Kasat, I assume that you did indeed get that data, sir.
Kutcher's lip twitched.
Tell me again about the cell where you and Mark Ibarra were held.
Chapter 32 President Garrett reached over his desk and touched a screen, clicking off the holo of Roland's interrogation. Ambassador Ibanez, General Laren, and the Keeper sat across from him.
He's telling the truth, Garrett said. At least that's what the head of every intelligence agency assures me. They've had him interrogated by their best, monitored his biometric readings with every answer. Everything checks out, and that is pissing me off.
We're better off with uncomfortable truths than pleasing lies,
Keeper said, her metal shell shifting colors.
The Toth!
Garrett stood and threw his hands in the air.
The one species with the vendetta against Earth is out for blood. There's no common ground, no way we can make them see reason. Could you imagine someone suggesting we bury the hatchet with the Zoros? No!
They're a problem, Ibanez said. But the Toth overlord stayed in the background. Bastion thinks the Kasat are a new aggressive species, not one with any particular agenda. Believe me, I'm not going to get in front of the galaxy and use the Toth want revenge as a bargaining chip.
She looked down at the bottle of water in her hand and rolled her eyes.
And what of Bastion?
Keeper asked.
We took over 8,000 Ibarans prisoner on Balmaseda. Have you seen the medical scans? Almost all of them are post-tail treaty procedurals. By the Omega provision, they should all be destroyed.
Bastion knows, Ibanez said. The Ruhald observers made sure to broadcast that we brought Ibar's people back with us. They don't have the med scan results, though. Damn sure they'll want them after the Ha'esh come back and confirm that the bodies the Vish had are violations of the treaty.
Will Bastion push for full enforcement?
Garrett asked.
Tough to say, Ibanez frowned. With the Kasat attack and our siding with the Ibarras,
Every last conspiracy theory you can imagine is floating around those domes. We've been in league with the Ibaras this whole time. The humans always do the right thing, like on Tikini. The Kasad are another tool of the Zaros come to finish us off. I've heard it all. The next conference is in 5 days.
And nothing from the Ibaras after they vanished through their mobile gate?
Garrett sat back down in his seat and laced his fingers behind his head.
Almost nothing.
Keeper held up a palm, and her shell morphed into a black box with leather straps on the edges.
The quantum communicator we used to speak with Mark Ibarra has switched on and off a few times. There's no answer when I use it, but I think they might want to talk.
She's waiting,
Garrett said.
Stacy Ibarra's waiting to see what we do about the prisoners. We bend a bastion on the Omega provision. She'll be our enemy forever. We push back, she might become an ally.
Then who do we want on our side? General Laren finally spoke up. Her or Bastion?
Most every adult in the Union remembers when Bastion sent the Nerusha and Ruhald to take the Crucible away from us,
Keeper said.
That was the old Bastion,
Garrett said.
The new incarnation's much more reasonable.
It's full of the same players, Keeper said. Let's not forget that.
If we choose Bastion over Ibarra, we've got a worse problem.
Laren stood up and walked to the back of the president's office, light glinting off the plugs at the base of her skull.
There was a good deal of fraternization between our forces and the Ibarrans on Balmaceda. Because their legionnaires keep to St. Colin and fought beside our rangers, many now see them as much less of an enemy.
She pointed to the holo emitter where they'd watched Roland's interrogation.
And video of his fight on the bridge has gone viral. His identity is unknown beyond the Armor Corps, but the rank and file are calling him the Black Knight.
She rubbed a temple.
If we push against the Ibarras, the Templar could mutiny. Not just the armor, but also the sailors and rangers that keep to that creed.
Are you just gonna throw this problem in my lap and skip out of here, Laren?
Garrett asked.
The problem could be the solution, she said. The investigation into Roland is ongoing.
What is there to investigate?
Keeper asked.
He went to fight the Kasad. We just had two fleets stand shoulder to shoulder with the Ibaras. Are all of them under suspicion, too?
Admiral Leto made that decision after he arrived, Laren said. Roland put on their colors before he ever arrived in system. He could have done so knowing he'd fight his own. Treason cut and dried.
But all the intel types say that he's telling...
Ibanez stopped talking when the president raised a hand.
Continue,
Garrett said.
The investigation isn't final,
Laren said.
It can conclude whatever we need it to.
Tossing one person into a deep, dark prison hole on Sharon doesn't do much for us,
Garrett said.
We release him,
Laren said.
The Templar's vigil is in a few days. The Templar will officially induct him into their ranks, and they'll do so knowing full well what he did with the Ibarras.
And then we charge Roland with treason,
Garrett said.
Now wait just a damn minute,
Keeper stood up, her surface roiling with fractals.
It will stain the Templars,
Laren said.
If they try to protect him, their guilt will only be more obvious to everyone. Who would stand beside a traitor, especially after the thorough and above-board investigation?
I haven't trusted the Templars since so many of them left with Ibarra. Can you neutralize them without too much trouble?
Garrett asked.
I'll need a few weeks to get everything ready,
Laren said.
You're talking about framing the Templar,
Keeper said.
They've been nothing but loyal to us, to humanity, since they were founded. You can't do this.
If they embrace a traitor, then they aren't loyal, Keeper,
Laren said.
Don't let your history cloud your judgment. We need the Terran Union to be a union. Tolerating a splinter with its own agenda will only weaken us in the middle of this crisis.
She's right,
Garrett let out a long breath.
We'll let Roland back into the Corps. After that, we'll let the Templar decide where their loyalties really lie.
Chapter 33. The white tunic almost gleamed beneath the lights. Roland ran his hand over the stitched Templar cross and adjusted his sword belt again. The weight of the empty scabbard on his hip made him feel like he was forgetting something. He looked up at the clock in the small dressing room. Almost sunset. Someone knocked on the door. Roland went over the ritual words in his head and put one hand on top of his empty scabbard. He opened the door, expecting to find his escort. Instead, there was Ignar in civilian clothes.
"Well, look at you,"
Ignar said. Roland hugged his friend and got a pat on the shoulder from a metal hand.
"Ignar, I heard you were on Balmaseda. They've kept me locked away until this morning, and why aren't you dressed? You should be ready for the vigil,"
Roland said.
"The cross suits you, Roland. It doesn't suit me, not anymore,"
Ignar said.
"My son's in Phoenix. He wants to spend time with me. I'd rather be his father than a Templar. That's all there is to it."
"Oh, I see," Roland said.
"Besides, all I could do at Fellowship was sit around and read. You got to spar with swords and drink punch. I saw you on Balmaseda. Saw you with the Ibarra armor. That was us that speared the Walker."
"I appreciate your aim." Roland ran a hand down his tunic, suddenly self-conscious.
"I didn't know you'd be there. They told me about the Kassad, and that's why I..." "You don't have to justify yourself to me. If I had to choose between sitting on my ass or cracking Kassad skulls, I would have hitched a ride, too. Shareel sees it the same way,"
Ignar said.
"Where is she? She doing better since she almost redlined?" "She's with her husband."
"Husband?"
"Well, not a husband-husband, but it's about the same thing."
"Husband? Shareel?"
"Boy, they have kept you in the dark since Martell found you on that bridge. Look, I'm on a 3-day pass. They let you loose after the vigil. Give me a call. My boy would love to meet the Black Knight. Won't shut up about you. And Armor Corps eat for free at every Standish-owned restaurant in the city. You know someone at Deco's that can get us a table?"
"Black Knight?"
The squeak of an opening door carried down the hall. Ignar looked to one side and went noticeably pale.
"Glad you're back with us," Ignar said. "See you soon."
He left, the metal feet in his boots making his footfalls heavier than the person coming down the hallway. Gideon stopped once he saw Roland. He stared at the tunic and cross, his eyes alive with anger, and one side of his mouth curled with disgust. Roland clicked his heels together and ran his hands down the crease in his pants. He stood up straight and said,
"Sir?"
Gideon walked closer, his face fighting back whatever rage boiled in his heart.
"You..."
Gideon put a fist up next to Roland's jaw.
"You were with them, Nicodemus and Morrigan, and..."
He brought his hand back down.
"Bassani, the fourth of your old lance was killed in action," Roland said quietly. "I don't know when exactly. They never told me."
Gideon turned his face to one side and squeezed his eyes shut.
"He died in his armor," Roland said.
"He would have."
Gideon took a quick breath and composed himself.
"Colonel Martell holds you at no fault. Captain Sobieski holds you at no fault."
He reached into a pocket, pulled out the Iron Dragoon's patch, and dropped it at Roland's feet.
"I'm not Martell or Sobieski, and it doesn't take a felt cross to make one loyal."
Gideon turned on a heel and marched away.
"I will see you on Mars."
Roland picked up the patch and ran his thumbs over the stitched symbol of a fleur-de-lis over a palm frond. He sat down in the dressing room, staring at the Iron Dragoon symbol, their heritage.
"Some men need their hate,"
Tongeus said from the open door. He wore the same uniform as Roland.
"Sir,"
Roland said and bolted to his feet.
"This initiate stands ready to..."
Tongeus raised a hand.
"Not yet," Tongeus said. "You've got a splinter in your heart. I can see it. You know why you were selected to stand the vigil?"
Roland slid the Iron Dragoon's patch under his tunic and put it into a breast pocket.
"If an initiate has shown enough dedication and aptitude, then that's all I thought there was to it,"
Roland said.
"We don't put everything in the primer."
Tongeus smiled, the tribal tattoos on his face almost seeming to crack with the effort.
"Two Templar must endorse you. I give you their names to carry to the vigil."
That's why Nicodemus and Morrigan said that before they got off planet."
Roland's eyes darted from side to side.
"But they're not Templar. Not our Templar."
"What part of the oath says Terran Union or Ibarra Nation?"
"None of it."
"That's right. The Templar are Templar. They deemed you worthy. We don't question their word. Honor's not here, son."
Tongea said as he touched Roland's tunic over the pocket with the patch. He moved his finger to Roland's heart, then put his hand to the side of Roland's face. Roland thought back to the Ibarra ceremony, where the hologram of St. Colin touched the armor being inducted to their order.
"You're judged by your actions, not your convictions or beliefs," Tongea said. "You take the cross and the final oath, it means you've already been measured, already found worthy. One sees your Templar, it means you'll pay the ultimate price for humanity. That you live by an ideal, that the future must be fought for, no matter what it costs you. That's who you are."
Roland raised his chin.
"The vigil honors those that came before,"
Roland said.
"And through the vigil, you are what is honored,"
Tongea said.
"If you're ready, I'll have your name."
"I am armor."
"Whose name do you carry?" "Alec Nicodemus, Sinead Morrigan. I know their quality and their oaths. Come with me, armor."
Sunset gleamed off the armor. The metal was polished to a silver sheen, all the weapons stripped away but for a ceremonial sword, almost as tall as Roland. The blade clutched in the armor's hands and held tip down, the hilt locked just in front of the helm's optics. Roland looked up at the armor, a factory-fresh unit assigned to him at the last second. His Ibarra armor had been taken away and sent to intelligence. If he ever got it back, he was sure it would come in many small pieces.
"The Corps may learn something useful. At least they got the Mauser. If we can bring a better weapon to the fight against the Cassat, then something good came out of that fight," he thought.
Ranks of armor stood motionless to Roland's sides and behind him. Every Templar in system and not on an active deployment was here, as was the tradition. Hundreds of suits and soldiers stood in silence around him. Across a parade field was Memorial Square and the statues of the Ironhearts, Carius's Templars and Winged Hussars, who all died in the final battle with the Zaros. Most of the soldiers bore a sword in their scabbard, full Templars. Roland and the rest of the initiates filled the first rank. Tongea grabbed Roland's elbow from behind, passed a small disc into his hand, then touched his own plugs. Roland pressed the disc home and felt a hum through his plugs. He'd used the mime relays at Fort Knox before earning his full plugs on Mars. A double pulse through the disc signaled that the new armor next to him was keyed in. Roland lifted his left foot slightly, and the armor mimicked him. Tongea cleared his throat loudly, and Roland put his foot down quickly. Colonel Martell walked across the front of the formation, his battle-scarred armor keeping pace behind him. He stopped ahead of Roland and faced the Templar. The colonel made the sign of the cross, then did an about-face.
"Forward!" Martell sounded. "March!"
Roland stepped forward, and his linked armor followed. In the distance, a drum sounded for the Templar to keep pace. Roland felt the world close in as he approached the memorial. For years he'd walked past it to and from work, never giving the place much thought. Now, he wished he could remember what it was to wander around the statues in ignorance again, feel what it was like to live without the burden of wars and the weight of his decision.
"Childhood is over," he thought.
Dust and gravel creaked underfoot as they crossed the parade field. Martell looked over his shoulder and called a halt. The colonel raised a hand up and slowly moved it to grip his hilt. Roland reached through his armor and could almost feel the blade against his palms. Martell drew his sword and held it high, reflecting light from the ever-burning flame at the center of the memorial. Then he flipped the sword down and gripped the hilt with both hands. Roland raised the sword in his armor's hands, and as one, the Templar drove their swords into the ground with a clash of metal on stone. Roland put his right hand on the sword and went to one knee, and his armor mirrored him. Armor and soldier knelt together. Roland lowered his head, and he heard the whine of servos from his armor as it did the same. A few minutes later, he smelled incense as Chaplain Crowe walked through the ranks with the censer. Martell's armor pounded its sword into the ground twice. Roland held his hand against his blade as he made his armor raise the weapon and drove it back into the ground.
"Sancti Spiritus ad sit nobis gratia," the Templar intoned. "Calin, ferum corde, perducat nos ad portam salutis. Amen."
Roland took a deep breath, concentrating on the aroma. Now began the hard part. The Templar would recite the litany, the collected psalms and prayers of the order, all of which Roland had memorized from Bassani's primer during his time in the Ibarra prison cell. Once the litany was complete, the Templar would chant the Da Pacem Domine until sunrise. Roland closed his eyes and joined in with the brother and sister Templar around him.
Domine, Jesu Christe, Sancta Pater, Aeterne Deus.
Roland heard the sound of boots against the ground. He looked up and Colonel Martell and Chaplain Crowe stood in front of him. Roland continued his chant, his throat sore from hours of recitation. Crowe handed a sword to Martell. The colonel examined it, running a thumb around the seal within the round pommel. And then Martell drove the sword into the ground in front of Roland. Martell grabbed Roland's arm, not touching the ceremonial sword the armor held, and pressed his hand to the new sword's hilt. The colonel backed up, raised one hand, and struck it against the armor's blade, which cut into Roland's palm. Roland did not flinch, continuing his chant as blood dripped down the sword. Once the first drop reached the earth, Martell removed Roland's bleeding hand and pressed it to the hilt of his new sword.
"Roland Shaw," the colonel said, "find those worthy to carry your name here. The Templar know you."
Martell nodded to Roland and moved away. Roland ignored the throbbing pain in his hand. His voice trailed away as he felt someone else approach. He looked up, but there was no one there. The sun's early light broke around the statues, and his gaze went to the Iron Heart, Elias. A touch went down the side of his face, and Roland's eyes welled with tears.
"I'm Templar," he thought.
He looked down at the red cross on his tunic and felt the press of his Iron Dragoon's patch beneath.
"I am Templar."
Chapter 34. Mark Ibarra paced back and forth in his cell, twisted light from the privacy screen reflecting off his metal body.
"We've been in worse spots, Jimmy,"
he said, wagging a finger at the drawer where he kept the dead Karesh probe.
"Remember all those years under my tower while the Zaros picked the planet clean? I don't. You made me sleep through all that. Something about me going insane after so long. Well, that's not going to happen here."
He raised his finger higher, then froze. He tucked the hand behind his back.
"I'm talking to you again. That's not what a sane person does. We talk to ourselves. Wait, no, we don't."
The privacy screen snapped off, and Mark found himself looking at the closed vault door. He whirled around to Roland's cell and found Stacy sitting on the cot, the door open. She held Bassani's primer in her lap and was gently flipping through the pages.
"Hello, Grandfather," she said. "Stacy, you're here because you want to be, I assume, to talk. Not because there's been another coup and we get to stare at each other and think about our life choices,"
Mark said. She set the primer aside and looked up at him, any emotion she might be feeling hidden behind her doll-like face.
"You never gave me the chance to explain," Mark said. "I kept the back channel open to Earth to feed them misinformation. That's how it works. If you'd known then, maybe something would have slipped up, and then the whole situation would..."
"Stop." Stacy stood up and took a step toward the bars between them.
"Lies. All lies with you. Forever and always. You built your empire on a lie that you were this amazing inventor. You raised me on a lie that I was born just a little different by accident."
She ran the tips of her silver fingers down the length of her other hand.
"You built the fleet that would survive the Zaros invasion on a lie. We lied to them all to win the war. And that lie brought us the Toth. Our debts are called due. Old sins require absolution. Yours and mine."
Mark went to the bars and reached out to her. She stood firm.
"We created Nefar to save humanity,"
she said.
"Then you betrayed it all.
I was only trying to help.
Lies. What do you want from me, Stacy? An apology? To beg for my freedom? I know what I've done through the years. If my soul went to the great beyond after my body died, I'm confident it's in hell. But you know why I did it. For all of humanity, to ensure a future, not extinction.